Hey, hey, it's that time again. Disability Law Show. We're back for the next 30 minutes. John Scholes, Sivan Tamarkin. Reminder, anytime reaching out to Sivan, because sometimes the things we discuss on the show, it's kind of a matter you want to discuss with Sivan at length or a member of his team. You always have the option to do so toll-free, obviously. 1-855-821-5900 is the number to reach out. Email help@disabilityrights.ca. And the website is simply disabilityrights.ca there as well. Lots of information can be gleaned from the website and more contact information as well. So on your own time, whenever you feel like it, don't hesitate to reach out to Sivan. We got lots to go today, a bunch of emails to get to as well. I know, Sivan, you want to touch on the Pocket Disability Lawyer and the capabilities of that particular app that you put together, that web page as well. But first week that was, case of the day, what do you got cooking, pal?
Hey, John, good to be here with you and our listeners. Let me start off by talking about an interesting call that I received on Monday. And it was from an individual who was in a pretty serious car accident about 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago. And that's key. It's important to understand. Almost 2 years ago, and I'll get to that in a second. She was, it was a lady. She was T-boned in an intersection, and the other driver had ran a stop sign. Now, she was injured. She's been in treatment since the accident. And before the accident, she was building up her side business. And she was just about to, that month, the month of the accident, transition into running her side business as her main job. It was that successful for her. She was earning pretty good money from that. I think she was mentioning $50,000 to $60,000 a year just for the side business.
Well, wow.
But it was a physical job. And because of the injuries from the car accident, she was prevented from switching those jobs and, in fact, wasn't able to do that side business and lost many of her clients. Now, it wasn't until this past year that she was able to start from scratch the side business again, build up her client base. And now she reached out to me because her insurance company, for the driver that caused the accident that ran the stop sign, asked her if she was ready to settle. And she wanted advice from me on what was reasonable. So really, the only reason she contacted me is because she got reached out to by the insurance company for the driver that caused the accident. Now, a few other interesting facts here. She's still in treatment. She's still building up her client base, as I mentioned. She's having marital problems, which are born because of the accident. So there's issues there. And again, she wanted to understand, you know, to get advice. And I asked her a whole bunch of questions about how the accident happened, injuries, the treatments she's undergone, where she is now. I asked, you know, from a scale of 1 to 10, how much she believes that she has recovered. Has she plateaued in terms of her treatments, in terms of her recovery, et cetera, et cetera. And she gave me all this information. What became clear to me is that she's going to be dealing with chronic issues. She's never going to be the same person as she was before the accident. She's always going to have certain pains and limitations, which are not going to allow her to do what she could have done in terms of that side business, to turn that into her main job, as she could before the accident. And so there's a bunch of things here that we discuss, and I explained to her. Number one, and this translates to anyone that's been in a car accident in Ontario. Number one, if you're injured as a result of a car accident, you're entitled to accident benefits. Accident benefits are also called no-fault benefits. Those are paid typically by your own insurance company. Okay, so they're called no-fault benefits because whether or not you were at fault, it doesn't matter, you're entitled to accident benefits. They include income replacement benefits, usually up to $400 per week if you can't work after the accident. They include medical rehabilitation expenses, and there's different limits. If you've suffered very minor injuries, it's up to $3,500. If you suffered more than that, it could be up to $60,000, and you can be also in the catastrophic category where we're talking about seven figures. Now, the insurance company that had contacted this lady, again, I had mentioned, is the insurance company for the other driver. And why this is important? It's important because when you are injured as a result of someone else's negligence, and it doesn't have to be 100% their negligence. It could be 75%, 50%, could even be 10%. It doesn't really matter. But if somebody was negligent and that negligence caused you injury, you may have a legal claim for compensation against that person. And again, in a car accident situation, it's the insurance company of that person that's going to pay you that compensation. In this case here, we're almost at the two-year mark. And why is that important? Because once she crosses the two-year threshold, once she crosses the second anniversary of when the accident happened, she may not be able to advance that legal claim for compensation against that other driver. In other words, that driver's insurance company may smile and say, that's it, we don't have to pay you anything. Luckily, she contacted me before that 2-year mark, so we're going to be able to help her here. And in terms of the settlement that she was offered, I can't give you the specific, John, because it's confidential, but I can tell you it was in the low five figures, okay? So whether that's $10,000, $20,000, I'm not going to tell you exactly, but it was somewhere in the vicinity of that. My assessment of what she's lost from a monetary standpoint, as well as in terms of what she's entitled to for pain and suffering, in terms of what her kids are potentially entitled to as Family Law Act claimants, as derivative claimants, because remember, the family members of an injured person also potentially have claims under Ontario law for compensation for the fact that their family member was injured. Her case here, I assess at anywhere being worth anywhere from $200,000 to $300,000. Wow. at a minimum. So again, to put this in perspective, this insurance company for the driver that caused the accident, I think, is trying to get away with settling her case with her by paying maybe a tenth of the amount that she's entitled to, maybe even less than that. Again, I give you a minimum here. I actually think that we can potentially dig into the case. I need to see all the medical documentation, understand the full consequences of the impact on her business. And by the way, a lot of times it's not clear cut, right? Most people think that when you suffer an injury, what you're entitled to is compensation for your pain and suffering.
Right.
In legal lingo, we call that general damages. But you'd be surprised. In the more serious cases where you have injuries that you suffer from them long term, usually the pain and suffering damages are actually smaller than the other types of damages, such as income loss or your inability to earn as much income into the future. Because, I mean, again, think about this, John. Let's say that I'm 30 years old and I suffered an injury. And because of my injury, my income is now going to be reduced by about $5,000 to $10,000 a year. For the next 30 years.
Sure.
Think about that for a second. We're talking about, what, $150,000 to $300,000 right there, right? I mean, yeah. In a lot of times, you have to look into the distance and you have, and it's not me. I'm just a lawyer, right? I have to look at what the doctors are saying. I have to potentially get experts involved, for which we pay for as the law firm. We're the ones who are funding this, not the person who's injured. So it's really important to get the advice you need. And my concern about this lady, as well as other people in the situation, is that they're simply oblivious. They don't know that they're entitled to this compensation. We're not talking about her just demanding money that she's not entitled to. No. The other driver was careless. The other driver was negligent. The other driver, because of that person's negligence, her life, this lady's life, is now on a different trajectory. A trajectory where she's going to earn less money, where her marriage is now going to be going downhill. It's been going downhill. It's been impacting her family. So my point is, people need to understand what their rights are. And this is what I want to let people know. If you've suffered an injury, if you've been in an accident, or you know someone, make sure that they get the legal advice. Just like they get the medical advice that they need to get the legal advice that they need. And by the way, that's what we do. That's what I do. Members on my team, we talk to people literally every single day. We advise them on their legal rights. Doesn't cost anything. Absolutely nothing. Not a nickel. Not a cent. We're happy to provide this information, just like when we do this show. We're doing this for the public. And then at the end, if you want us to help you, sure, we'll be more than happy. Obviously, it is a business. I mean, cards on the table. We do have people calling us because they need us to help them. But if you don't want to retain us, if you want to go with someone else, if you don't want to pursue your claim, completely up to you. As long as you understand your legal rights, I've done my job and I'm happy for it. I'll answer all your questions and make sure that you are fully informed, because knowledge is power, especially when you're dealing with insurance companies.
So the portion that you said, she an entrepreneur about to kick over and switch gears to her own business for income going forward, to calculate that, I mean, just obviously you're not going to sit down with pen and paper. Do you have, like, you know, forensic accountants that do these things for you? Do you have a whole team that can decipher how much that would be going forward, depending on her age and how long she's going to be working? Specifically, right?
100%. Exactly. Yeah. You're absolutely right. We have people that we call upon. These are experts in their fields. They have experience in this. Again, these people are individuals I've worked with in the past. I have a selection of accountants that I like to use. They're forensic accountants. They know their stuff inside out. And some of these scenarios are very complex. Some of these, you know, especially when you're dealing with people with their own businesses,
that's what
because
I'm saying,
yeah. You have to look at the documentation, right? It's not just a T4. You're not looking at just the income statements. You're looking at a lot more than that. And again, this is where the experts do come in. And I'll tell you something else, John, because you raised a good point. Many years ago, when I used to work for insurance companies, so I was on the other side of this. I don't work for insurance companies anymore, but when I did, the insurance company would really like situations where the other lawyer, the lawyer representing the injured person, did not use experts, because then it's that much more difficult to calculate these kinds of damages. That's why when I deal with a case, whenever there is any complexity, I have doctors I can go to, I have accountants I can go to, I have engineers I can go to. If we're talking about how the accident happened and the impact, there's a whole slew of experts that we use, and they are critical. Why? Because when I use these people, the insurance company on the other side knows I'm serious, and that's when they open up their checkbooks.
Quickly, before we break, pocketdisabilitylawyer.ca. Tell me about it, Bill.
So that's an interesting website, John, that we created a few, it's a year ago, I guess now. It's a long time ago. And it is an online tool that allows people to essentially get answers to their questions about their short-term or long-term disability claims. Sometimes people just want to Google this stuff. Sometimes people just go on websites, which don't give them the right information. But they don't want to call us necessarily. They don't want to email us. They just want to get the information on their own. If you go to pocketdisabilitylawyer.ca, within 20, 30 seconds, you're going to get a customized answer that answers all your questions that you want. And then at that point, if you want to reach out to us, you can. If you don't, close down the browser and we will not know that you were there. But it's an amazing thing, John. It's been used countless times. It's free, it's anonymous, and it's accurate.
Again, pocketdisabilitylawyer.ca. Okay, dipping into your emails, thank you so much for sending them along. We'll start working through the pile after a short break as we continue with more of the Disability Law Show. Hang in there. And we're back. Disability Law Show continues. Savan Tamarkin and his team, always reachable. They're welcoming your phone call anytime, 1-855-821-5900. Website disabilityrights.ca. You want to send us an email. May appear on a future show, by the way. That is help@disabilityrights.ca. And any other further questions, you can use this quietly on your own and anonymously as well. A website called mydisabilityquestions.com. That's a beauty because you can search for your questions, see if one similar has been asked. That's the way the algorithm works. That'll save you some time, right? Because there'll be an answer there already. Or if not, leave yours there and it will get answered. Again, mydisabilityquestions.com. All right, first email of the show, pal. Here we go. Richard says, guys, thank you for answering my email. I was walking in the parking lot of Vaughn Mills. Okay, first of all, that parking lot, you got to be careful at all times because it's a madhouse. Anyway, seriously, I don't know what gets into people trying to get a parking spot in that mall, but he says he was walking through Vaughn Mills Mall and a car didn't see him and hit him. There you go. I didn't break any bones, but I hit my head on the curb. I lost consciousness and the ambulance and police came on scene, but I didn't go to the hospital. I went back to work. I'm a painter. But after my fourth day back, I started noticing I had some issues going on. My hands started to feel numb and I would easily drop things because I couldn't grip anything. I also noticed that I would get dizzy a lot. I went to hospital yesterday and they're sending me for a bunch of tests. I don't have car insurance as I take public transit. Do I still have an option to put a claim in? It's a great question.
Great question, John. And this was a question we had dealt with on the last show, but I didn't finish my answer. So for any new listeners, let me just break this down here. Number one, you know, whenever you're dealing with a pedestrian versus vehicle, those tend to be fairly serious accidents, even at low speed, because you're dealing with a car and a human body. Now, we have to ask two questions here. The first question when we deal with any accident of this sort is, who was at fault? Generally speaking, when you're dealing with a personal injury, whether it's a slip and fall, whether it's a car that doesn't stop at a stop sign like we had with the case that I had mentioned on the first segment, if you are the claimant, you're the one who's asking for compensation from the other person who caused the accident, you are the one who has the onus of proving that they were negligent. Now, I can tell you that when we speak and I get the information and the facts, I can give you my assessment as to whether or not I think that they're negligent. When you're dealing with someone who is a pedestrian, that onus of having to prove that they're negligent is reversed. Presumptively, the vehicle driver is the one that's considered to be at fault, unless they can show that they were not at fault. And the reason this is important is because it makes it that much easier to make that claim for compensation. Okay, so that's the issue of liability, fault. Again, it doesn't automatically mean that the person who was in the car here that hit Richard is at fault, but presumptively that person is at fault unless they can show that they were not at fault, that Richard did something wrong. Now, let's move to damages because this is really the key thing here. He says he didn't break any bones, which happens a lot, right? You can be very seriously injured and not break any bones. You can have a concussion. You can have sprains, strains. You can rip muscles. You can have torn shoulders, right? Breaking bones, even though we think about this as being the more serious injury, not necessarily so. But he says he hit his head on the curb. He lost consciousness. Okay, so that always gives me – it's always a red flag for me. The ambulance came, but he declined to go to the hospital. To me, that was a mistake. If you are in an accident, and especially when the police and the ambulance come, you should get checked out. Whether you should go to the hospital or not, it's a decision you have to make in the moment. I would follow whatever the recommendations are of the paramedics. However, even if Richard did not go to the hospital, I would have said, go to a walk-in clinic, go to your family doctor, get checked out. I mean, you hit your head on the curb, you lost consciousness. That's serious. You know, it's like an accident, John. I don't know how many times I've had accidents where I thought nothing was wrong with the car, only to find out later that there were problems, and they only figured out those problems, the mechanics, when they open the hood, right? They look under the hood. A lot of times with injuries, that happens as well, where you don't feel anything or don't feel much on the day of the accident because the adrenaline is pumping. But then later on, you're experiencing issues and you become worried. And at that point, you go to the hospital or to a doctor. So always do that. But Richard did not do that. But he says here that after his fourth day back as a painter, he started noticing some issues going on, numbness. He would drop things. So to me, again, I'm not a doctor, but it indicates neurological issues here. Yep. If there is numbness, he says he got dizzy. Again, symptoms of concussion. Potential brain injury, traumatic brain injury, even if it's mild. He says he went to the hospital yesterday, so that was last week, and they're sending him for a bunch of tests. Not surprised, completely not surprised. Now, he says he doesn't have car insurance, so can he put a claim in? Okay, so again, let's break this down. Yes, 100%. If you don't have your own car insurance, you're still entitled to accident benefits, those benefits that anyone in Ontario is entitled to if they are injured as a result of a collision with a car, whether it's a car versus car, pedestrian versus car, cyclist versus car. You're injured as a result of a car accident. You're entitled to accident benefits. If you don't have your own insurance, guess what? The insurance company of the other driver is the one that is going to have to pay you those benefits. And again, those benefits include a bunch of things. Income replacement benefits if you can't work. That could be an issue here for Richard. Potential medical rehabilitation expenses. You know, if he suffered minor injuries, I mean, that would be only up to $3,500. But it's a lot more than that. If the tests come back and he has other issues, which again seems like he does, he's got numbness, he's dizzy now. He potentially has either a concussion or mild traumatic brain injury. Potentially, I've seen that happen when you hit your head on something. So really important to understand. Now, we don't know at this point what the full impact of these injuries are going to be on Richard's life, on his ability to earn income. But I have seen, John, these kinds of cases where a person thought that they were not injured spiral into massive claims because only in the days after the accident and only in the weeks after the accident, people fully understood and appreciated the extent of the injuries. And a lot of times that has to do with a brain injury. An acquired brain injury that you don't necessarily see, right? Because there's no broken bone, but you start seeing symptoms, forgetfulness, memory loss, headaches, a variety of symptoms. You can Google that stuff. You can certainly talk to a doctor. So I always tell people, you have to get checked out after an accident. In Richard's case, based on everything I have seen here, he 100% is entitled to accident benefits from the insurance company of the vehicle that hit him. And potentially here, from what I can gather, potentially has a claim for compensation, which could be fairly significant if he will not be able to go back to work to the same level and capacity as before the accident for a long time. He potentially has a large claim here against that driver, their insurance company. So we're going to help him. And here's the thing. When I talk about these things, John, most people, yourself included, you don't know how to deal with that stuff. You have no idea what paperwork to put in. You have no idea who to contact. This is what we are here for. This is what we do. We do this for a living. My team and I, that's all we do. We help people understand what their legal rights are, and then we help them get the benefits and the compensation that they deserve. But this, again, I really hope for Richard's sake that the tests all come back negative, that this is temporary. Yeah. But I'm telling you, I've seen situations where something that looks, like a very simple accident, a very small accident, a very slight injury turns into long-lasting and really life-ruining conditions, chronic injuries, chronic massive head injuries that unfortunately don't get treated in time, and that's just bad news.
Richard, thanks so much for that email. I'm glad we could finish off answering that from last week, and I know you'll follow through with that phone call if you have not already. I think we've got time for Shanisa. Next email says, guys, I've been on LTD for 6 years. I had stage 3 breast cancer, and now I suffer from depression and anxiety. I also suffer from neuropathy in my fingers and toes, and my legs hurt since chemo. I've had over 8 people pass away in less than 2 years, including my father and his sister. Both my family doctor and my psychiatrist said it was good for me to get away and take a trip. I want to know if this will affect my LTD, and do I have to tell them I'm going away? It doesn't say anything about vacations in the RBC handbook.
So, Shaniza, this is an excellent question. Number one, I'm so sorry for everything you've been through. I mean, John, just imagine how difficult it is to deal with everything, both on the physical side of things and psychologically with everything that she... I mean, horrendous, just horrendous. So, Shaniza, I'm more than happy to give you this information. You've done the right thing in looking in the LTD insurer's handbook, and it's absolutely key to look there, especially at the LTD policy itself, if it's different than the handbook. Why? Because... these policies will contain provisions which will tell you what you can and cannot do, what your rights are under the policy, and what your obligations are under the policy. And if it says nothing about vacations, there's nothing contraindicated, nothing that says that you're not allowed to go elsewhere, outside the province, outside the country, well, technically you can go, absolutely. But here's where people sometimes get into trouble, John, and this is what I would tell Shaniza here. Number one, you have to be very careful with social media. Anything you post on social media that's available to the public, I can tell you, your insurance company, the adjusters, are scouring the internet. They try to get as much information as they can by way of photos, videos, comments, anything that they can latch onto, where they can argue potentially that, look, if you look at the social media posts of this person, doesn't look like they are disabled from working. Look, you know, they're in Barbados and they're on a beach and they're playing volleyball. And again, not saying that's what Shaniza would do, obviously, but I'm saying that you have to be very careful in terms of the social media postings. That's number one. Number two, I think that you need to speak with your doctor just to make sure your doctor's comfortable with you going away. And I only say that because if you don't do that, doctor finds out, you know, you don't want the doctor to say, well, you know what, that's not good for your treatments. In this case, however, I can tell you, doctors typically tell people that if you can, yeah, get away, try and get away. The downside of something like this is that if you do talk to your doctor about the stuff, most likely it's going to make into this conversation is going to make it into their clinical notes and records. And down the road, when those get disclosed to the insurance company may question you on those clinical notes and records and about your vacation. So there's nothing wrong per se in taking a trip somewhere and spending time with people. Nothing wrong with that. Ultimately, that doesn't mean that you're not disabled. It doesn't mean you're not suffering from cancer as you have been. It doesn't mean that you're not suffering from all the other ailments, potentially psychological here. I mean, given everything that's going on, it's just one of those things where you have to tread very carefully. Don't advertise this, I would say, like I said, on social media. But if it doesn't say that you're not allowed to go in the policy, well, then there's no reason for you, you know, not to go. But it's a good thing, John, for people to ask this question, because some policies contains provisions which may complicate things for people. So again, we're here to answer these questions. Shaniza, I wish you all the best. If you have any other questions, feel free to reach out to call me or email me, and I'll be more than happy to speak with you at any time.
I think it's good too that she didn't just say, no, okay, whatever, grab a plane ticket and go and just be quiet about it. She
right.
has basically the backing of her doctor and a psychiatrist. You know, for all intents and purposes, this is going to help her get better, saying it's good for her to take a trip. So at least she has some medical backing, right?
Yeah, 100%. And that's a good thing, absolutely. But again, people need to understand that if they speak to their doctor and their psychiatrist the way that she's done here, this stuff may come up down the road with the insurance company. So she just needs to understand that while I don't think that the insurance company can do anything negative, penalize her for this, that this may come up. And so again, I'm more than happy to speak with her to explain, here's what happens if they contact you, and here's what you can and should not say to them in the event that this happens, just to protect her.
Again, Shaniza, thank you so much for reaching out with that email and the phone number for Shaniza, if you're listening, and after that email, and for you as well, if you've caught the last half hour of the show, we really appreciate it here. You can always get a hold of us, Savannah. Here's that number as we wrap it up for another show, 1-855-821-5900. Again, 1-855-821-5900. That email address that we read from every week is help@disabilityrights.ca. And as Savannah mentioned a short time ago at the beginning of the show, pocketdisabilitylawyer.ca. Super handy. Do you have a case? You in the dark? You're not sure? Use that website. Takes about 30 seconds to answer a bunch of drop-down menu questions. Super simple to use. Free and anonymous as well. Again, pocketdisabilitylawyer.ca. Thank you so much for tuning in. Keep the emails coming. Keep them coming. We'll get to more next week right here on the Disability Law Show.